Welcome back to our final module in the What's New with System Center 2012 R2 Jumpstart. I'm Simon Perryman, Technical Evangelist with Microsoft, and I'm joined once again by Kenan Owens, one of our Senior Product Marketing Managers with the System Center team. But, surprise, there's now three of us here as well, and we're actually joined by Bradley Bartz, who's one of our Principal Program Manager leads, and actually develops or designs the Windows Azure Pack, which is one of these new capabilities that we've added to our core offerings we're really excited about, and we're going to spend some more details on shortly. Now, over the course of the day, you see that we've kind of covered a lot of content already. We've really built up this base foundation with our cloud, our infrastructure, started monitoring it, and then built in our IT department's best practices of automation, self-service, and IT service management. So what's the next step? Well, the next step is the Windows Azure Pack, and looking at how we can tie some of these best cloud practices, pull them into your own data center. With that, I'm going to hand it over to Bradley to first of all introduce himself and then kind of give us an overview of what we're covering for this module.
You bet. My name is Bradley Bartz. I'm a Principal Program Manager here at Microsoft. I've been with the company for over 15 years now. I've had the opportunity to work on Visual Studio through several releases, been working in the web tooling space, and now working on Windows Azure and partnering with System Center on the Windows Azure Pack to bring these kind of cloud-based experiences and modern services to the Windows Server private hosted cloud. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today, is what is this thing called the Windows Azure Pack, and what does it mean to me, or to you, as the case may be. Okay, so we'll have a quick introduction. We'll talk a little bit about it. We'll go through some of the capabilities that come in the Windows Azure Pack. We'll talk about how to build IaaS services, self-service experiences, the new virtual machine role that's exposed, and the next steps for building Cloud OS. So what is this whole thing all about? We're talking about this one consistent platform that we call the Windows Azure or Cloud, Microsoft's Cloud Solution. And so we're building a solution right now in Microsoft on Azure, called the Microsoft Azure Public Cloud. We're also taking the technologies that we're building for Azure and making those available for on-premise deployments, both into the enterprise and for our hosting service providers, so that they can provide an Azure-like environment for their customers, a consistent user experience and a consistent application platform for the applications that they're building. That is part of this one consistent cloud platform that we're building for both Microsoft's public offering in Azure, for our enterprise partners, and for our servicing providers who are providing solutions to their customers. In this release of the Windows Azure service, or the Windows Azure Pack, we have four key components that are part of this solution. One is this new websites capability. By the way, when I talk about websites, we all know that there have been websites for years and years and years on the Windows platform. So what is different about the website solution that's bundled with the Azure Pack for System Center? This is about a cloud-first designed platform for hosting websites. In Azure, last June, we introduced this new Azure Websites capability, but it's a new web hosting platform. It is a PaaS offering targeted specifically at websites to allow you to make elastic, scalable web applications that can scale based on demand and scale in and scale out, as well as great tool integration with things like Git and Visual Studio and these kind of capabilities. It's a DevOps-optimized workload in Azure. We're taking that same technology that we run in Azure, Microsoft offers to our customers who come to Azure for building modern web applications. We're taking that same PaaS technology, as well as the user experience that we developed for our Azure customers. We've bundled that up in the Azure Pack. We've integrated with System Center to make that a first-class PaaS experience that can be delivered with System Center for your customers, whether it be customers in the enterprise or customers as a service provider or hosting provider that you want to make available for your solution to your customers. We've also integrated into the Azure Pack the same IaaS, or virtual machine experience, that we built for Azure. Now this is built on top of the System Center virtualization fabric, but it provides that self-service IaaS experience of provisioning VMs, managing the lifecycle of VMs, as well as defining your virtual networks, and even providing connect capabilities allowing you to bridge your provider-defined virtual network into the on-premise data center. All of those capabilities are part of the virtual machine integration workload that's part of the Azure Pack and System Center. So what's in that? It's kind of the Azure flavor, but on top of the System Center fabric for doing IaaS from your data center. We've also added another service into this release, which is called Service Bus. One of the top requested services as we were looking at this capability was, again, presentation tier, this web tier, the virtualization tier, but also Service Bus, which is a messaging service. It's a messaging PaaS for how can I have this reliable messaging framework for delivering messages between multiple tiers of my application. And that is what Service Bus does. Service Bus is a PaaS service that we run in Azure for providing messaging capability to our customers. It's now a service that's bundled into the Azure Pack for deployment and operation in your data center that you can offer to your customers. Tying these three workloads together is the service management portal and API. These are the Azure specific components. In addition to the website's PaaS, this is effectively the UI management framework as well as the management set of REST APIs for how to interact with these services. So what you're going to see here is that same Azure portal. By the way, when I say same, I literally mean the same. This is the same Azure UX framework that we use for running 24/7, extending those capabilities to our customers. We're taking that UX framework, we bundled it in Azure Pack, we're shipping it to you for you to run that portal framework in your data center for you to offer those same kind of rich experiences, those immersive experiences to your customers. So that framework is part of it, as well as integration with AD and ADFS for federated identity support. It's a standard space using HTML and CSS and JavaScript for a rich immersive experience, and it's device friendly to work on a variety of form factors from PCs to tablets to mobile devices. All of that is bundled together in this thing we call the Windows Azure Pack. Fundamentally, this gives kind of an overview of what this looks like. There is a management portal that is part of this application when it gets deployed. There's a REST API that everything that it talks to for all the services that it consumes. The portal itself is a stateless portal. It is a UI framework. Everything that is done in the portal is exposed through REST APIs. So they can be done by not only the portal we provide, but by partner portals as well. Then we provide the web tier, which is built on the next gen web technologies from Microsoft that we use in Azure. It's based on a web farm framework and web farms for front ends, workers. It's built on Windows Server and provides this new PaaS. IaaS is actually built again on technologies that we know on premise. It's built on top of the service provider API. It's built on top of System Center, VMM, Windows Server, ultimately providing virtual machines as a service. And with Service Bus, we have the way to do reliable messaging between our applications. Okay, let's take a peek inside, and this will give you a better view of how this is all coming together. So what I'm showing you right now on the screen, you're seeing here on the left, is the experience as we've delivered it in Windows Azure. On the bottom, you see the Windows Azure Fabric. On top of that are a bunch of PaaS services that we, Microsoft, operate in the cloud that we want to make available to our customers. This is the worker role. That websites, this is the new website PaaS that I was just describing later. This next-gen, cloud-first web tier. We call our websites, it's the Azure Websites Capability PaaS. We do VMs now for IaaS in Azure. So this is how we provide true VMs in Azure. We have that capability. We have SQL, we have Service Bus, caching, and a bunch of other services that we're running in Azure on top of the Windows Azure Fabric. On top of all of these services, there is this Service Management API. That provides a consistent API for how consumers, your customers, would come in to access these services, where there's a common REST API. It's all based where they get access to whatever services are on their subscription. They can get access to those services. And again, on top of that is this Azure designed self-service portal, where as a customer Azure, I can log in, I can manage the services that I'm getting from Microsoft. That's the experience that we built for Azure that we operate and run in our data centers. Let's take a look at what is Azure Pack doing now for on-premise, for our enterprise and hosting service providers. One, we're built on top of the fabric that you know, the fabric that is tested and reliable on-premise, which is Windows Server 2012 R2 and the tremendous value pack, a value proposition in that platform. Built on top of that is System Center 2012 R2 with the service provider APIs. Again, everything you've been learning about System Center 2012 R2 and the service provider APIs, All of that value accrues here. We're leveraging those investments, those experiences in the net technologies. That is the fabric for our enterprise and hosting service providers. So what does Windows Azure Pack add to that? Okay, we take that experience that we built for Azure, we slide that over, and we make that that capability available for our enterprise and hosting service providers. This is also what we call an adaptive UI. That UI will adapt to whatever services and capabilities your IT operator or your hosting service provider has made available to you on your subscription. If it only includes VMs and IaaS and networking, that's all you'll see in the experience. If it includes additional services, you'll get that. So it adapts to the set of capabilities that you have access to, and it honors the same subscription contract that you would have if you were consuming those same services from Azure. But then we add to it. We add a provider portal. This is the operator portal. How do I maintain and the set of services that I'm offering to my tenants? Now, you'll notice that that's missing in Azure. Well, in Azure, we're the operator. So we have basically a bunch of PowerShell scripts and a bunch of tools that we run internally, and it's a complex environment. We have a full operations teams that maintain that. What we've done is we've simplified that experience for our hosting service providers and our enterprise IT operators. We provide an operator portal for how they can manage their offers and set the set of quotas and constraints on the subscriptions and plans that they want to extend to their tenants and maintain the health of these multi-tenanted services that are running in their data center. And we call this the provider portal. It is built on the same UX framework that we're delivering in the Azure Pack. So what does that mean? One, it has the same device reach. That provider portal now works just as well on tablets and mobile devices as does the tenant portal, but it's inside the firewall. It's protected. It's only accessible by the operators or the service operators, as opposed to the tenant portal, which is exposed in the tenant network where they have access to it. If it's a hosting service provider, that might be outside the firewall. If it's within the enterprise, it's in the domain where I would have access to my customers coming in. All right, that's the user experience. Then what do we do in the Azure Pack? We take that service management API. Now that is the same REST API that we designed for Azure on how you interact with these new modern cloud-based services that are running on a cloud fabric. We take that service management API and we slide it over so that that is available as part of the Windows Azure Pack. This provides the REST API consistency with Azure. It honors the same subscription contract. It honors the same when you're getting access to your website service, whether it's running on an on-premise or hosted cloud, it's the same contract that you would get if you were running those same services in Azure. So one, we have a consistent API for both in Azure and in our on-premise, enterprise, and service provider clouds. What is that? That's part of the one consistent cloud platform that we're describing. Now that you've got the frame, you see what the fabric is, you see those Azure consistent APIs and user experiences coming in, now we start flowing over a set of services. These are the modern PaaS services that are designed to run in this kind of environment. So you see we bring over that website PaaS from Azure. That is the same workload, the same technologies that we built for Azure, we slide those over. They now run on top of System Center and Windows Server to provide this PaaS, high-density web hosting solution to your customer. With all the same great DevOps tool integration that they get in Azure, you can now offer those directly to your customers running on services running in your data center. We work with System Center and SPF to provide that IaaS tier, so we have a consistent IaaS experience and set of APIs for doing IaaS and VM provisioning through that service management API. And we work with SQL Server to provide a SQL experience for doing database as a service as part of this release. And one of the new features that I just want to do a shout out right now is part of this in the Windows Azure Pack, we've enabled now SQL Always On. So if you're doing a database Always On capability as part of a SQL cluster with an availability group, you can now offer SQL Always On to the customers coming in through your tenant portal so that they can have that high availability of the databases that are being provisioned on your SQL maintained back end. We also add Service Bus for a messaging PaaS service that can run in your data center. Again, all providing the set of consistent experiences and APIs as they would find in Azure. And we're setting up a pipeline for flowing additional services that we deploy on premise, the same kind of capabilities. That gives you a good overview of the kind of things we're developing in the Windows Azure Pack and teeing that up. Ultimately, this is achieving workload compatibility and creating this consistent developer experience between Azure and on-premise.
So, Bradley, there was a question that we had from the forum.
Absolutely.
And previous questions, and that is, the Windows Azure Pack, is this something that I can skin myself, or is this just a something that is deployed as just Windows Azure itself?
You know, that's a great question. So with the Windows Azure Pack, it does come with a theming kit. What does the theming kit do? It allows you to rebrand it. It is a white label solution, so you can apply your own logos. You can apply your own color themes. So you can adapt that experience and make it your own. And this was a critical thing as a white label solution. We go out to hosting service providers. They need to have a brand awareness within the portal.
Sure.
That is built into it. There is a theming kit that we make available as part of it. But also for the enterprise, it's important also to have that identity flow through so your customers know that it is a corporate asset that they're getting access to. So we do have a theming kit that is part of it. So yeah, absolutely.
Excellent. Excellent.
Okay. I want to tee up a concept here. As we think about this, you saw that we had kind of that tenant, that consumer view. We also had the operator admin view. We really do have these two core personas in this platform, this framework that we're bringing. It is the consumer view. Who is the consumer? It is the customers coming in and acquiring services from the operator, from the data center, whether they're getting infrastructure as a service, whether they're getting websites provisioned on the web PaaS, whether they're defining virtual networks. It is the consumer of a service that is operated by an operator. We think of these as consumers. Every customer that comes into Azure is a consumer. They're consuming the set of capabilities that we, Microsoft, host and run in our data center. We view that as the service consumer. They want self-service administration as a consumer. I want to be able to manage and administer the services I'm getting from my operator. I want to be able to acquire new capacity on demand as my needs change. I want to have kind of an operations experience for the services that I'm acquiring. I want predictable costs, and I want to get up and running quickly. That is that self-service experience for these cloud services. Okay, so that's the consumer view. We also have this provider view. This is the organization that offers and administers the services, ultimately, that are provided to the consumer. And the focus is slightly different. Their focus is on cost. Their focus is on maximizing per customer profit. You might think, hey, I'm an IT organization. I'm in the enterprise. What do I care about? Profit. Actually, you do care about cost reduction, and there's a huge emphasis on chargeback and how do I optimize and get greater efficiencies within my organization. Because it's tight everywhere, and IT organizations around the world are trying to run more efficiently and do more with less. And this is helping them do that and help drive the hardware efficiency and do automation. Why do they want to automate everything? It is about reducing those costs. So automation is a key part of it. And again, they want to offer differentiated LCA service licenses. That might be a hoster experience, so they want to have different SLAs for their customers, but it's even an enterprise experience. I may have a Skunkworks project that's going on, and I may not want to put them on my big iron that I need for my production workloads, and I'm going to give them a different kind of SLA for the kind of workloads they need. So we really see this kind of convergence on the types of capabilities that both hosting service providers want to offer and modern IT organizations want to offer to their customers. So we break the world down into these two views. So as we go through this presentation, I'm going to start by describing some of the self-service or consumer views that we make available. We'll go through that, and then we'll have a demo of some of the capabilities that are in the Azure Pack, and then we'll talk a little bit about the experiences that are available for service providers. Okay, we'll go ahead and jump into this now, and I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on the website capabilities, service bus, and virtual machine capabilities that are made available to consumers. So these would be available to your customers as they come into this offering. And some of this we've touched on, but they will have access to this website capability. Now you'll notice, if you look at that screenshot that's in this UI, that looks very similar to the experience that they would get if they actually went up to Azure and acquired websites. The difference is, this is the experience they're getting from you, from the operator, from the service IT organization, from our hosting service provider. They get the same capabilities that they would if they were going to Azure. They can build highly scalable web applications. They can integrate. They can have tightly coupled source code control as part of their application. They can manage their application with real-time telemetry. They can scale with one click from single instance to multi-instance. They can support modern web technologies from .NET, Node.js, PHP, and Python. And so the key thing here is they're getting all the same capabilities, or the vast majority of the capabilities that we make available on Azure, here in the Azure Pack for the on-premise deployments. Service Bus. Again, it's taking that same experience that we've built for Service Bus for them to be able to provision namespace, for doing guaranteed message delivering, for honoring the published subscriber messaging patterns. It's standards and protocol-based, supporting REST, AMQP, WSSTAR, interoperability with .NET, Java, JMS, C, and C++. And it's also fully integrated with the portal, just as it is in Azure. And this was actually a top requested customer feature as we were working with our Futures Council and our TAP partners for a messaging system analogous to what is available in Azure, available to our hosted and on-premise clouds for building modern web applications. And that is now available as part of the pack. And as for the virtual machine experience, we've got the best of both worlds. We've got the great capabilities powered by VMM and SPF and the new capabilities that, quite frankly, even go beyond what's available in Windows Azure today, also with the great self-service, easy experience for how to acquire VMs and manage those VMs, that self-service, elegant experience that was built for Azure on top of the powerful fabric of management. There's a question I'll go ahead and take right now coming from the forum. So,
yeah, one of the questions was, will the Azure virtual machines here, will it allow you to create guest clusters inside of the virtual machines that you deploy up in the Windows Azure pack?
Okay, so for VM provisioning, we actually support two levels of provisioning. You can provision standalone VMs, but you can also provision this new capability we're going to talk about, this virtual machine roles, which allow you to define a portable and elastic application tier that can scale. So you can now define these VM roles and scale them from single instance to multi-instance. So you do get this kind of elastic VM provisioning. They're called VM roles. And this is being done in a model that'll be consistent with how Azure is delivering these elastic VM tiers. So we can have consistent provisioning and service template models, but these new virtual machine role templates for Azure and on-premise. And so that provides portability, elastic, gallery support, and it supports both Windows guests and Linux guests as well. And that's part of the Azure pack and part of the VM workload is these new VM virtual machine role tiers, and I'll give you a demo of that. This is all being done on a user experience that is consistent and APIs that are consistent with Azure, as well as some networking capabilities allowing you to define site-to-site connectivity and tenant supplied or bring your own IP addresses into the virtual networks that you define. Some additional capabilities that are included in the Windows Azure pack is identity. We support integration with Active Directory and ADFS for federation and co-administrators. So just like in Azure, you can have a co-administrator of a subscription. We even go one step further that's nice for our on-premise and enterprise partners, where you can define a co-administrator as an NT group. So now you can define a group that is a co-administrator on a subscription and manage group membership just strictly through AD and have access to the same capabilities in Windows Azure pack. We also do these database services with integration for SQL Server and for MySQL as well. And then we allow the whole experience to be extended and modified by the service operator for unique services running within their data center. This is all being done with a set of consistent APIs with Azure. Matter of fact, the Azure SDK, which provides a set of PowerShell scripts for programming against Azure, is being updated to support the Windows Azure pack for consistent PowerShell scripting, whether it be against Azure or against the Windows Azure pack, deployments running in a partner data center or within your enterprise. Okay, with that, I'd like to, unless there's another question.
There's a question while you're flipping over to the demo. There was Server Provider Foundation, and now there's Windows Azure Pack. Are they the same thing, different?
Great question. So what's the difference between the two? The Service Provider Foundation is primarily about providing access to VMs or virtualization, that IaaS tier, the virtualization tier. So that provides great for virtual networking and VM provisioning. And the VM role capabilities are now exposed through SPF. SPF is being updated to align with kind of the Azure IaaS API. So the VM role capabilities that are lining up have that Azure flavor to them. But as part of the Windows Azure pack, SPF is exposed as the IaaS provider. So it's a layer on top, but it adds all these additional capabilities for the website paths, for the database services that are running, the subscription management, the offer management. It provides the brokering across multiple multi-tenanted cloud services running within your data center. So it is an extension of and incorporates the SPF. So SPF plugs in and integrates well.
So SPF is a piece of
it is a piece of that REST API, and it plugs in directly. So Excellent. We've been working very closely with the SPF team. Okay, let's go ahead and jump in and do a demo. And what I've got here is a machine. Because we've been talking about the Windows Azure pack and Azure, what I'd like to give you an example of real quickly is what an experience looks like in Azure. And then we're going to say, well, what does that same experience look like for the Windows Azure pack running on top of System Center? So let's just do that as an example. I'm going to start by logging into Windows Azure. Now, in this case, I'm logging into Windows Azure with my Microsoft credentials. Azure supports organizational IDs where you can actually do this federated authentication against a corporate AD installation. So in this case, I'm going to log into Azure with my Microsoft credentials. So Microsoft provides available to its employees an ADFS instance for doing federated login and access to other corporate assets. So in this case, I'm logging in through the Microsoft IT-provided ADFS instance to access my Windows Azure account. So I'm going to log in with my Microsoft credentials. And I'm now going to log in, but I'm going to log in to Windows Azure. So here you just saw organizational ID or corporate AD identity providing access to Windows Azure. So now I'm logged into Windows Azure. You'll notice that my credentials is up at the top, say bradleyb@microsoft.com. So I'm logged in, and here I can access all the subscriptions that I have access to in Windows Azure. And you'll notice that there are a bunch of services I have access to. This websites is this new web PaaS that we operate in Azure. I have access to virtual machines. I have access to SQL databases. I have access to networking for defining my virtual networks and things of that nature. I'm going to go ahead and go into a website example. In this case, I'm going to create a brand new website. I'm going to do a quick create of a website. I'm going to call it My Demo Store. And I'm going to create My Demo Store. And I'm going to go ahead and hit OK to create that site. And what it's doing now is provisioning this new site in Azure. Now, a key thing about this being a PaaS, it's not having to spin up a bunch of new VMs. It's actually going to a PaaS, a Microsoft-operated PaaS service, and a request is going out, provision a new resource for this subscription. You'll notice that it's already done. That was much quicker than actually spinning up a full VM. That site is now available. I can go in and start managing the site. And there are multiple things I can do for managing it and deploy it, but how do I get started? One of the things we allow you to do is integrate with source code control. Now again, I'm demoing the Windows Azure experience. In Windows Azure, I can back my websites with a Git enlistment. Git, by the way, is a very popular source code control system. And what's surprising me is not only is it popular in the web development community among our web ISVs, it's also popular in the enterprise. So I'm going to go ahead and associate with the website that I just created in Windows Azure a Git repository. And this is actually a Git repository that's being provisioned within that PaaS service. It is now done. It has actually backed that website with a Git repository. I have the ability to copy the publishing endpoint to my Git repository for the site. I also have in my enlistment here, I have a local Git enlistment of a project running in GitHub. I have a buddy who has a GitHub project in GitHub. I've cloned it locally so that I can operate on it. In my local GitHub, my Git enlistment, I am now going to add a remote connection to my Git repository for my website in Azure. So I'm going to say Git remote add Azure, and I'm going to paste in that endpoint. Now that I've added an endpoint called Azure to my Git cloned Git project on my local drive, I'm now going to push the content from my local drive up to Windows Azure. So I'm saying Git push to Azure the master or tip of my local enlistment. It's now going to do that, and it's asked me for my publishing credentials. And I just got logged out. We will log back in. There we are, we're back. That was very interesting. I'm now going to provide my publishing credentials to the to my Git enlistment. Hit enter. And now what it's going to do is it's going to start packaging that application for publishing from my local Git enlistment up into Windows Azure. This will take just a few minutes. Make this a little bit bigger here for folks. Yeah, so what you're going to see, the text of what's on the screen is not as critical. The key point I want to make right here, right now, is that Git, and this isn't like a Microsoft version of Git, and I'm not typing any Microsoft-specific commands. This is a standard Git installation on my machine. I'm using the same Git publishing that I would to any other Git repository, whether it be GitHub, or in this case, I'm publishing to Windows Azure. So all the output that's happening right now is standard Git output as it's packaging up that application and publishing to the Git service running in Azure that's backing up my website. That process is completing here. Matter of fact, you'll notice while that is happening, notice what you're seeing here on the website itself. Notice that Azure is recognizing that Git publishing is happening, and you're seeing this deploying icon spinning there. So Azure is recognizing that the Git enlistment is pushing up into the cloud. It is now complete and has been completed. And if you notice, the website has been updated. It says, hey, you now have an active deployment that is finished being published. And if I were to go here, I could actually get a full version history of everything that's just been happened, where I have it's updating the branch, updating the submodules, pending the deployment. It's doing all this work to publishing. So I have a version control system backing the website that I just published into Azure. If I now were to go to the dashboard for my site, this is where I can monitor the health of my site. I can see what's happening. I can get real-time telemetry. Here you're noticing I'm getting real-time telemetry on my site. And I can also go ahead and hit the website, the endpoint for my website that I just created and deployed from a local Git enlistment up into Azure. So real quickly, there it is. This is the site that I just deployed into Azure. And I'm going to show you one more thing real quickly. That's great. We now have website integrated with GitHub or Git for deployment. A great solution, but what's different? What makes that a PaaS? If I go back into this website, and this is in Azure, and I just want to call this out real quickly. One of the things I can do in Azure on this PaaS service and scale it. I can scale it. Right now I'm running it in a free mode. I can run it in a shared mode, and I can run it from single instance to multi-instance and increase the number of instances. And I can do this and commit that without having to change my application. It will automatically scale to handle more load. And I can even move it from running in a shared tier to running it into a standard or dedicated tier where I get reserved capacity dedicated just to me, and I can still scale it from single instance to multi-instance. When I go into standard, I can pick what kind of scale units I want, whether I want one core or multiple cores, and I can still scale from single instance to multi-instance. That's what makes it a PaaS service. That's why it is more than just doing traditional website hosting with IIS. This is a modern web site running in Azure. Okay, great. Enough Azure. Let's get into the Azure Pack. How is this different, or what does this look like when I run on basically a web or the Windows Azure Pack running on System Center? I'm now going to log in to a deployment of the Windows Azure Pack on System Center and SPF. In this case, we've configured our login to give me a couple of options. I could log in with direct AD authentication. I could log in with a hoster-supplied email address, which many hosters do. Or in this case, we've integrated with Microsoft's ADFS deployment, so I can log in with my Microsoft credentials. In this case, I'm going to log in to the Windows Azure Pack with System Center using my same Microsoft credentials that I just used to log into Windows Azure. So here I go. So I'm going to log in with Redmond. So I am logging in with my Redmond credentials, my Microsoft credentials, but I'm not logging in to Windows Azure. Here I'm logging in to a hoster's deployment of Windows Server and System Center and the Windows Azure Pack. You'll notice the UI looks very similar, slightly different. We've got a different color scheme to it. And again, this could be adapted pretty dramatically to meet the needs of your customer, your hoster. And you'll notice I have a set of different services. In this case, I have a subscription that's giving me access to websites, just like it did in Azure, virtual machines, networking, service bus, SQL Server databases. I can even do MySQL databases and manage my account. And again, what I would see in this UI is based on what I have access to in my subscription. But let's take a look at that same experience that I just did in Azure, which is creating a website. I'm now going to create a blank website just like I did in Azure. I'm going to name it My Demo Site, just like I did before. And now it's going to go ahead and create My Demo Site. And again, just like in Azure, it's not having to spin up brand new VMs. It's going to that PaaS, that multi-tenanted service running in the data center. It's provisioning a new tenant. And it's just done that. It's provisioned My Demo Site. I can log into the management dashboard. And now, look, it's very similar to what I had in Azure. I can even integrate source code control. In this case, I'm going to do it. I'm going to set up a Git repository, just like I did in Azure. So now what it's doing is setting up a Git repository to back my website, running at this hoster site. It's now done that and completed it. I'm now going to take that same that publishing endpoint. I'm going to copy it just like I did in Azure. Now I'm going to go to that same Git enlistment I just published to Azure from this folder. I'm now going to do git remote add I'm going to call it WAP, and I'm going to put in that endpoint that was just provisioned for my site at this deployment. Now I'm going to do the same stuff. Git push WAP master. So I'm saying push to WAP this time instead of Azure, the tip of my enlistment, the same code I just published to Azure, but this time I want to publish it to WAP. Notice I'm getting prompted for my publishing credentials. I'm going to provide my credentials here.
Now, is this running now, this website's running on local Windows servers, or?
This is running on that website PaaS that I was describing. It is running on Windows servers in the hoster's data center. It's running on those Windows server, which are part of that on that Windows server has this new website PaaS deployed on it and running on that PaaS. So it's actually not talking directly to Windows server. It's talking to this modern website PaaS, which is in turn running on Windows server. And it's doing all the same steps that you just saw in Azure. Matter of fact, Git doesn't know. It didn't know it was publishing to Azure before. It didn't know in this case it's publishing to a Windows server deployment in the data center. I just want you to know that the experience is identical. Although, it's kind of fun, it happened very quickly, if you'll notice. It's already done. I can go now to my portal running at this hoster deployment. I can see I have a completed active deployment. I can get a full version history. I can see everything that was deployed just like I could in Azure. If I go to the dashboard for this website I just published, I can go and hit. I'm now going to hit that endpoint for the site that I just created on WAP, on System Center, in a hoster's environment. There's my application running just like it was in Azure. Very quickly got it up and published. You'll notice that it's there. Everything is working. I can go and scale. And this is why it's different than your traditional Windows server. I now can, just like I could in Azure, I could be in kind of a free offer if that's how my hosting service provider or IT organization decided to make it available. I can go into a shared. I can scale from one instance to multi-instances. And I can even go into reserved capability where I can pick the size of compute node I want allocated and still scale from one instance to multi-instance without redeploying my application. Just like I could in Azure, I have this modern web PaaS running in my data center, not in Azure, running in my data center, offering this world-class experience to my customers who can come in and deploy these modern web applications seamlessly with this great immersive DevOps experience. And that's the consistency model that we talk about. Okay, I want to do a couple other things here. I want to talk a little bit. I'm going to go into this virtual machine capability because part of this Windows Azure pack is this integration with SPF and System Center to provide self-service IaaS, just like I could in Azure. So here I'm going to do it.
Now, as you get that set up, let me just jump in and ask a quick question.
Yes.
Colin. Service Provider Foundation, can you just quickly define that, give an overview of, you know, when you would use that?
So Service Provider Foundation, think of it as a resource provider that the Windows Azure Pack talks to for everything that it does for IaaS and for virtual networking. When it goes to talk to the websites, it doesn't actually go through SPF. Each multi-tenanted service offers its own REST endpoint. If you remember that architecture diagram I showed a while back where I showed websites as a service, I showed VMs and networking and SQL, SPF is the VM and networking resource provider that plugs into the Windows Azure Pack. So it is used for the provisioning of those resources. So in this example, when I go into those virtual machine tabs, the experience that you're seeing now is all being routed through SPF onto VMM for providing the set of capabilities that we're seeing visualized through the WAP management dashboard. Gotcha. Okay? So here, I have a deployment of a server that I've done earlier, and I can get a management dashboard for that service. I can see that it's running. I can look at my instance count and see how many instances that are running as part of this. I'm going to do it real quick. I'm going to do a new and this is where I'm going to say new virtual machine role, and I'm going to create this from a gallery. In this case, instead of running on that dedicated PaaS service for website, I just want to provision my own servers. I want my own dedicated servers. I'm just going to do traditional IaaS web hosting, and I, as a customer, I'm not a provider, want dedicated machines that I just want to provision. I may tweak the heck out of them. I may remote into them and change them and do all kinds of stuff to them. So I just want raw instances. So I'm going to go and provision these from a gallery. So I can go ahead and provision these. My custom So I'm going to go ahead and deploy these things. So I'll go my custom web. I'll hit next. By the way, you notice there's a version drop down here. One of the new capabilities in the virtual machine role that's built into the, it's built on top again, this is all built on SPF and VMM, but one of these new capabilities in that virtual machine role capability as far as a templating model is this idea of versioning. I can deploy with version one, get an application up and running, and if the publisher makes available an updated version, I can get an alert that there's a new version of the templates that I've already deployed, and I can then safely roll out the updates to my application by I'll get an alert that the update is available. I can pick and have that update rolled out. And I can even pick if there are multiple versions available, which version to roll out. So that's why this version dropdown is there. I'll go ahead and pick that. And everything you're seeing, the parameters here, these are all defined in this new virtual machine role definition model. There's a new ResDef, a new CSDef model for how I define resources that are in this. This is an adaptive UI where there's a ViewDef that knows how to collect the parameters for this. And I can say, hey, I want my initial instance count of one. With a maximum and a minimum instance count, I can say, hey, I'm going to make it three by default. I could pick my core size, whether I want mediums. I could pick which VHD I want to make available. I could define all these attributes, my admin name that I'm going to make available as part of this. Provide those credentials. If I can type the same thing. Okay, probably typed the first one wrong. Okay, there we go, got it right. Go down and I can pick what time zone I want it provisioned in. And pick a time zone, go ahead and complete it. Now, what you just saw me do is define all the attributes specific to the virtualization. The next set of parameters that will be collected are the application specific. And again, these parameters would be unique to every gallery item to the gallery and that are provisioned. I'm not going to go through the provisioning because this would really do a real VM provisioning and take a little bit of time. We've already done that for the sake of getting this up and going, but in this case, if I go to this demo web server has this deployed, has that template deployed, and I can go in and I can look at the number of instances that are there, and I can increase the number of instances that are part of that deployment. So I can scale it if I were to look at that and add new instances to it. I can scale if I hit the scale tab. Right now there's one instance. I can go like this, two or three, hit save. That will automatically scale out in VMM multiple instances of my workload so I can scale and address more capability. Just like you saw me do it with websites, here I'm doing it with virtual machines in the VM tier.
So something on this, since these VMs are deployed, they could be monitored by something like GSM and monitored as far as performance, and then you could then create rules that automatically scale these things out.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you could do that. As a matter of fact, you'll notice that this particular application, there's an update available, and I could go ahead and hit update and apply a new version of the update for this template. What I'd like to show you real quickly is a very cool feature. In Azure today, you can remote or use RDP to get access to your VMs.
Okay.
And when you provision VMs, to get remote access, it typically means you need to be on a public network. So I have to define my VMs with a public network. I have to enable RDP in order to get remote access. So for example, if I were to go to this VM that I have, let's pick an instance in this VM. I'm just going to go ahead and pick an instance. If I were to try to connect to it, to this instance, it's going to connect through a standard RDP desktop connection. If I were to go ahead and hit connect, and attempt to connect, it's going to go through and do the standard remote desktop connection to establish allow me to RDP into that desktop. But if the template I've provisioned and gotten this doesn't have RDP enabled, I'm not going to be able to connect to it.
Right.
If it's not on the public network, I'm not going to be able to get access to it. Matter of fact, in this case, you'll notice I can RDP to it because the remote desktop has not been enabled in this template that I'm deploying. So I don't actually have RDP access to this particular template. I'm going to show you a new capability, and I'm going to show you this on actually a Linux. Here we've deployed a Linux machine, and this is deployed as a new virtual machine role running on VMM through SPF with integration of the portal. Now, if you're doing Linux development, really, I'm going to have to use SSH or some other way to get access to that remote desk. How do I get access to doing it? But again, I need to have that networking set up. What if there's a problem booting? Or what if I want to manage that machine through some other way? How do I get access to that VM running in the cloud? Here's a brand new capability that is being delivered first on the Windows Azure Pack and with System Center and Windows Server. And it's called Console Connect. And this is a new capability. I'm going to connect to the console. It is actually using an updated version of the RDP client to get access, so it's using the standard RDP protocol, but it's going through a secure channel, and it's going through that virtualization bridge on the back end, and I'm going to connect now to it, and now I'm going to connect to this Linux instance I have running on System Center and VMM, and here I am actually logged into that Linux machine running in the cloud. Try doing that with Windows Azure or any other hosting service provider. That is cool. This could be running the full GUI desktop. It might even be a machine that hasn't even booted yet, and I may be troubleshooting booting problems. I can still do a console connect securely and get access to that machine up and rolling. So that's one of the really cool features that's included in the Windows Azure pack and with System Center integration. I'm going to go ahead and log out of that. So that gives you a flavor of the set of capabilities. And I'm just touching on it. There is so much more when it gets into defining virtual networks and how I set that up, to actually doing a connection to my VPN on-premise and extending basically a site-to-site network so I can bridge my on-premise network with my hosting service provider, my virtual network I've defined there for my VMs, so my VMs can be running in this extended enterprise network.
So I could access them directly as if I were accessing my regular network.
That's right. So you have all those capabilities. There is so much show here, we just simply don't have the time, but I highly encourage you to get access to the Windows Azure Pack and SPF and take a look at these technologies that are available. I'm going to switch back real quickly because I want to touch on some other capabilities. What you've just seen is a set of consistent consumer experiences, whether we're talking about modern PaaS services like for the website, or whether we're talking about these new IaaS experiences that were originally developed for Azure that are now being shipped on top of SPF and System Center, and new virtual machine role capabilities for scale, provisioning, and versioning. I'm now going to talk briefly about how we enable these services for a service provider. And again, if you look at those two views, we have the consumer and the provider view. I'm going to talk real quickly about the provider view. Who are these? These are the operators. These are the administrators that offer these new services to their tenants. And they do this by defining a plan. They can define an offer with a set of capabilities. And these are constrained capabilities where they can define a set of quotas, where they might say, hey, I know this particular customer tenant only needs a certain set of capabilities. I'm going to limit that. I'm going to limit how much CPU, how much bandwidth, how much capabilities they're going to have access to. And I do that through defining quotas. Their subscription will be gated that way. They might also have a subscription to a production deployment, and they'll have a different set of quotas there. And again, that's the subscription model. We help manage those set of subscriptions, and everything that you see us doing through this UI is again done through REST API, so this can be integrated with other workflows and other management tools that are being used either in an enterprise or a hosting service provider. So again, we look at this as a way to provide these kind of offer types and how to provide add-ons or upsell opportunities, how to manage subscriptions, administrate services, and extend and customize the environment. We also have, and this is so cool, an exciting part about the level of integration between the Windows Azure Pack and System Center. Here, in that provider dashboard that we provide as part of the Windows Azure Pack, we have an immersive experience for automation, for running with the runbooks in your data center, where you have a full management experience for managing the runtime, for managing the life cycle of a runbook, for authoring runbooks, for how you author the PowerShells. You get this web-based runbook authoring experience for managing runbooks in the jobs and integrating with other System Center technologies. So this is a great integration point for automating your data center in a consistent management experience as part of the Windows Azure Pack. So we'll get a deeper dive. I'll show you a little bit of that. And again, one of the things that the Windows Azure Pack provides is this usage and billing pipeline. While it doesn't provide a complete billing solution where it actually generates billing statements, it does provide that billing usage pipeline as a way to aggregate resource utilization across a disparate set of resource types, whether we're talking about VM and network utilization or whether we're talking about PaaS utilization on the website or service bus capabilities. So you're going to get resource utilization on a per subscription date basis, on a not only per subscription, but per resource within that subscription, so that ultimately you can do a full chargeback or billing solution. And so we provide that level of integration, including data warehousing solutions coming with System Center 2012 R2 and their data warehousing, all that usage data being aggregated and collected in that data warehouse for great data mining opportunities and doing server inventory reports. All that capability is there. Let's go back to the demo environment real quickly. I'm now going to log out of my tenant experience. And again, by tenant, that is the consumer view. I'm now going to log in to that operator view. In this case, I'm going to get a different authentication challenge. In this case, I'm not a tenant. I'm not running through that same public gateway or that same public. I'm running within the data center. So I'm an administrator. In this case, I am, in fact, going to log in as administrator. Provide my credentials. I'll go ahead and close this window here. And now I'm logging in to that provider dashboard. Now, as this queues up and gets loaded, you're going to notice a couple of things. It's going to look very, very similar to that consumer view that you saw us demonstrate when we were in the consumer portal. You notice it's got a different color, but it is the same portal framework. What's cool about that is now, as an operator in the data center, I'm now the IT guy, I'm now the service provider, I can still get out my new Surface, my Surface Pro or my tablet devices, and I can manage this dashboard just as easily from a tablet as I can from a PC, just like a tenant. So it's no longer a second-class experience, you get this great web-based experience for the service operator as well. But you'll notice now, while it's the same UX framework, I'm managing a different set of objects. Instead of managing websites, instead of managing VMs, instead of managing databases, I'm now managing higher order services. I'm now managing my website clouds. These are the PaaS services that are running to provide websites to the tenants. I can drill into a website cloud and I can look at the health of this cloud in my data center and how that's going. I can look at the machines that have been provisioned as part of this website cloud. I can even look at all the websites that have been provisioned against this PaaS offering and their health. And I can basically manage the health of this PaaS. Likewise, I can go in and look at VM clouds. And in this case, I can drill into that VM cloud and I can look at the individual clouds that I'm running. And again, this is where I might have multiple clouds running in VMM in my data center. I might have a commodity cloud I'm using for my freemium tier where I don't want to charge a whole lot, or maybe I use it for these skunk work development projects that are going in my organization. I might also have a gold cloud that's running on production hardware that I've really designed for scale out and load. So I can have multiple clouds defined and offer access to different clouds to different types of consumers coming into my data center, and I can manage each cloud accordingly, and I can look at the health of that cloud. I can see how well it's being used and what its utilization is. I can look at the virtual machines that are being used across my cloud deployments. I can look at the networks. I can look at all the automation events and jobs that are running against my VMs. Here's all the VMs that are being provisioned against my various clouds and what's happening and the subscriptions they've been provisioned against.
So if I had a System Center environment and a Windows Azure PAC environment,
yes,
are they mutually exclusive?
It's an additive experience. So you can start with Windows Server 2012 R2, and I can have VMM and Service Manager and VMM Manager, and I can go in and build that. And if you want to provide self-service, web-based access to these, and I want to kind of evolve my offer into be kind of a almost like a hosting service provider, where I'm providing provisioning on demand within those quotas, so you don't have to open the floodgates. When we say provisioning on demand, it doesn't mean unlimited, unfederated access.
Right.
It means whatever access you've decided to make available through an offer. My offer may say you get to create 3 VMs. That's it. But I'll let you create those 3 whenever you want, and I'll let you delete them whenever you want, but you only can create 3. Or it might say I'll give you 100.
Right.
And I can define what cloud they're on, and I can give you different quotas on different clouds, so you can define that and make those available so those tenants can come in. If you want to evolve your IT organization to have this kind of agility, this kind of self-service experience that your customers might get if they went to Azure, or they might get if they went to another hosting environment,
right,
you want to provide that level of agility to your customers, then you would look at the Azure PAC to integrate it, and everything that you're seeing in the Azure PAC is still showing up to your VMM console. It is still showing up to your service management and your operations management dashboard. That's what great, this really is a better together story where you don't have to abandon what you know. You can leverage what you know to manage and run your data center and have these additive experiences built on top and now provide this self-service experience to your customers. And I want to, while we talk about that real quickly, I want to tee on just a couple of things before we run out of time. This is that automation integration where you can look at what's running in from a runbook experience in my data center. I can look at all the runbooks that are in my environment. I can go in and actually author and get a rich authoring experience for my runbooks. Let's find a runbook that has an actual script to it. I can look at all the scripts and I can go in and I have a web-based editing experience for the scripts. Let's find something that's interesting. Here we go. Where you actually get a web-based authoring experience for my runbooks that I can run. I can schedule jobs. I can manage jobs. I can see what jobs are running, what the health of those jobs. You get this full runbook automation. So I can start to automate I can hook to System Center events. So as they go through that tenant portal and provision a new VM and I want some specific runbook action to occur to do it, I can have that all automated to trigger and run a runbook, even though they provisioned it through that consumer portal. Ultimately, this is all being done by defining plans. And that's really at the heart of this, where you can define a set of offer types. In this case, we have a gold plan defined. And in the gold plan, I can define what service types. I've defined this to have access to our website cloud, our virtual machine cloud, what SQL servers, what MySQL and Service Bus they have access to. With any one of these service types, I can just have a set of quotas and constraints that I make available. And ultimately, I can just go look at all the users and subscribers coming into the system, what the health of those subscribers is. So that's a real quick, high-level overview of the Windows Azure Pack with System Center 2012 R2.
Actually, one more question before, if you want to go back to the demo to answer this.
You got it.
How do we manage credentials for different tenants, maybe from different organizations or something like that? How do you handle them? Is it SSH keys, certificates?
Great question. So I want to separate out this idea of what do I have access to manage. So this is really about having access to a set of services. And this is really predicated on subscriptions. Mm-hmm. So you as a hosting provider can define a different offer type for different types of consumers. So I might have one type. You could define an offer type for every customer if you want. You can have what we call public and private offers. But in an offer type, when you define a plan, you're going to set a set of quotas and constraints on resources. Then you'll get auth. We're actually using the same modern claims-based authentication model as Azure. So they'll get a certificate generated when they log in through ADFS. A claims will be generated that's bound to a subscription that you've defined. So when you define an offer type, you can define an administrator for that offer, and that'll be a unique AD identity that is the subscription owner. So that might be a business owner in an organization. You'll say this, like you might be Bradley B. At Microsoft Domain is the owner of this subscription, and then I can have co-admins that are NT groups, and I can have different NT groups, but this plan is only going to have a subset of capabilities. It is not all the capabilities that my organization has access to. So I might have access to 3 or 4 subscriptions, all with scoped access. And then as I provision VMs within that service type, they're already throttled to whatever the offer type has. Okay. But I can then take those VMs and have those accessed and domain joined or not domain joined or whatever I'm doing for providing access to those VMs. That can be my normal corporate governance that's applying to those VMs, that I can apply to those VMs. So think of it as two access. One is it's just like Azure. What is subscription-based access? And even on those subscriptions, as an administrator of a subscription, I can upload a certificate to the management APIs and then make a private certificate and make the public certificate available to those tenants that I want to have programmatic access to the REST APIs. Or I cannot provide any programmatic access and never upload a public certificate, and then they will not have access to the RDFE API or our REST APIs unless they've been authenticated through ADFS. So there's a couple of different auth models. But I highly encourage you to download the product and work with System Center and SPF and put these together and start evaluating and take a look at what's in the package.
Excellent. That's all of the questions we have so far.
I'll go back here to the presentation. And at this point in time, what you've really seen is this high-level flyby. As you can tell, there's so much that I really couldn't get into that's included in this, but you should have gotten a flavor for what's involved, what's in the package, and kind of how it's layered and put together. Ultimately, our vision, our goal, is laying down this one consistent platform for how you consume a cloud service, whether it's running in the Microsoft-operated Windows Azure environment, whether it's running in your IT organization for how you're providing cloud services to your customers, or how it's running in a service provider environment for how they're providing, or how you as an enterprise might even be acquiring services from that service provider for one consistent cloud platform.
So when we looked at everything that we went through today with the all the way from infrastructure provisioning at the very beginning through infrastructure monitoring and application monitoring with Juan, as well as the automation and self-service and IT service management with Brandon, and then now the Windows Azure Pack with Bradley, is that we really, with System Center 2012, enable that management of the Cloud OS or that key component of the Cloud OS to provide this for our customers. And if we look at the what comes in with System Center 2012 and SP1 is that in R2 is that we're providing for our customers this best of breed management for their Windows Server and Microsoft workloads. We're providing the ability to support your multiple environments, whether they're Windows Server, whether they're Linux, whether they're Microsoft, Hyper-V, VMware ESX, Citrix Zen Server, and pulling it all together, supporting all the new capabilities that Windows Server 2012 R2 supports, being able to allow you as an organization to treat your infrastructure more like a service provider treats theirs, which can lower operational costs and give your customers a lot of flexibility so that they can provide these self-service plans that they can leverage and deploy VMs whenever they want inside of the controls that you provide for them. And when you pull all of this together, it's really about the application and what they're deploying on top of everything and being able to use those applications, whether they're on your premise, Windows Azure, or at a service provider, and be able to monitor and manage them, be able to see them with things like Global Service Monitor, being able to ensure that you're getting the best of breed performance from them through things like System Center Advisor. You're getting it all together to allow you as an organization to provide these things to your customers to most better handle these new workloads that are coming out.
Great. Thank you, Kenan, and thank you, Bradley, for joining us there. With that, we are going to wrap up the jumpstart on what's new with Windows with System Center 2012 R2. And I want to remind you to please complete the final poll, give us some feedback, and to continue to come back to the Microsoft Virtual Academy for jumpstarts and other training. This particular event will be posted on the MVA in about 2 weeks' time with transcription as well, so please encourage your colleagues to come back, check it out, learn about this great content, and check out some of the other future jumpstarts that we're providing. With that, I want to thank you for joining us. I want to thank all of my presenters that joined today, Kenan, Juan, Brannon, and Bradley. I want to thank our support team who's done a great job with the Q&A. Please feel free to continue asking questions. We'll stay on for a little bit longer. And finally, I want to thank our production team who helped set up the event and kept switching these cameras around so you could watch us. We'll see you again soon. Thank you.